sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
China exports up 9%. IMF and World Bank downgrade global economic growth. Markets are now in the red for the month in the U.S., and earnings week is in full swing. We got lots to talk about today because we have an action-packed couple of weeks coming up with earnings, and some of the things that are happening out of Europe are going to affect your portfolio. So it's the beginning of this episode, number 284 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Here we go. Well, it's October 15th, 2012. This is Andrew Horowitz, and thanks for joining me today. And each and every week, we talk about, oh man, we mix it up. Last week, we talked with Mark Faber of Gloom, Doom, and Boom Report. That was a good episode, I think. We talked some politics, which pisses a lot of people off, and tried to be in the center of the discussion in terms of not leaning to the left or the right. But there were some fun things that went on last week with the debate. At least it was interesting, maybe not fun. Hopefully you watched the vice presidential debate. I thought it was really interesting. I thought that Biden looked really good, came out of the core and, thinking that, well, maybe Biden's not going to hold up. But, man, he held up pretty darn well. He came out fighting and in shape, ready to kind of left, you know, kind of jabbing and right hooking and jabbing and right hooking. Ryan looked good. He had a lot of stats, a lot of good things. So at the end of that, I think, well, it looked like it was a draw. Clearly a much better debate overall than the first one we had with the presidents, or the president and the possible candidate from the Republican side. But I don't know what you thought about it. I thought it was really interesting. I find them to be very interesting these days. It's kind of like, I notice the older that I get, the more I kind of tune into those kind of things. You know, we kind of younger, you want to see, whether it's drama or you want to look on the TV for other things. Boy, these political, the political debates and the political scene right now, I think, is very fascinating. Not to mention the fact that, obviously, it's going to impact our money in our pocketbook because, you know, you see what happened with the coal stocks as a prime example. When Romney comes out and he's, you know, saying, oh, I love coal, I want to use coal, blah, blah, blah. Of course, the natural gas pricing didn't hurt as it's been rising every day of late. But at the same time, because the potential for a much softer stance from Romney and the potential of him getting into office has helped out coal stocks. Look at some of these. They have been just on fire, really rallying very nicely. Let's give a talk about China for a second. You know, there's been a lot of discussion about what's happening in China. Many of the numbers that have come in of late, you know, on their manufacturing, on their various exports, imports, and the overall extent of what's happening in China as far as a slowdown because they're not adding a lot of stimulus to the areas that we would traditionally think they would. But in the background, they have been doing a lot of work. They've been doing work, infrastructure development, very targeted. They've been doing work in the area of the banks, and they're trying to keep the housing prices stable or not from rising too much. They're trying to cool down inflation, which we will find out tomorrow what the actual inflation numbers, the PPI, is over in China. It looks like it, from an analyst standpoint, they're expecting a pretty significant drop, which would be good because in a way that helps the discussion and the framework for potential a continuation of stimulus. Now, listen, you know that I am the first to say enough with the stimulus. Let's let markets work their way out. Let's let the current economic situation naturally develop or drop off to a point where, you know, you kind of like a, you think of a forest, you know, every once in a while it has to burn down till they, you know, get some of the old stuff out, enrich the earth again, and then stronger trees grow from there. Now, obviously, I don't want to burn down China and I don't want their economy burning down, but the fact is that sometimes you have to get rid of some of the waste, some of the excess fat in order for things to grow properly again. So we have a lot of that to look forward to in terms of China. But the good news was that even though expectations were for about a 5% increase in exports, they had a very nice increase of 9.5%, which was good. The imports were light, by the way. That wasn't so great. We also saw last week that the economics in the U.S., in terms of consumer confidence, that was pretty interesting. That came out on the high side of the last few years, plus, you know, on the well above the 80 mark. I think it was 83, I believe, on the Michigan, University of Michigan consumer confidence. That was very interesting because when you combine that with some of the recent jobs numbers, the ISM service index, and look at really what's going on from the U.S. economy, and even look at some of the growth factors from the ECRI, things look like they're stabilizing here. You have the housing market, and clearly from a lot of different directions, doing a bit better. Not everywhere, but in many places, at least stabilizing. You know, but then you see an uneven kind of situation. I was in Tallahassee this weekend at FSU. My daughter goes there her final year at FSU, and we watched the game, and one day we went to the movies, and I was in a mall, and I tweeted this, and I saw a horrifying situation. I was in this mall, you know, I think it was two floors, a traditional mall that you would find indoors anywhere around, all the basic stores and all that. Honestly, 90% of the stores were closed, and there wasn't, I looked down the hall, I looked all the way down this one hall, and there was nobody there. I took a picture of it. I was shocked. Nobody. It was 12 in the afternoon on a Saturday. Can you imagine a mall that is in such bad shape that things are closing left and right in the middle of Tallahassee? Now, it happens. Fact is, it's an uneven recovery. So you may be there saying, hey, you know what? Things aren't so good over here. What is he talking about? My housing market stinks. Nobody's selling. Nobody's buying. And somebody else could be saying, hey, you know what? Wow, boy, houses selling fast all of a sudden. Look at South Florida, you know, certain areas in New York. And, you know, you can pick your places around that things are doing better, but it's very uneven. And that's why we're getting all this controversy right now. We see that it extends to the fact that the U.S. is healing a bit, but Europe is still in really bad shape. The emerging markets are seeing some more inflation thanks to the injection of QE by the Fed. And we're seeing a flight over there because there's a risk on trade and they're getting a lot of inflows to higher interest rates, which are being offered by many of the emerging countries in their bonds. So there's this kind of, two-headed monster that's showing up these days. We could find a lot of bad things to talk about that are really concerning and some very good things that are happening that are very, confidence building. So that's probably why we saw the consumer confidence go well, understanding that there will be monetary policy initiatives that are, you know, forever going, QE infinitum. But we're also seeing some other things that are happening that are very interesting. For example, we're seeing when earnings are coming out right now, we saw Alcoa last week, and Alcoa does what Alcoa does. They go up on the report, they beat a little bit, but they guided down the overall aluminum output and production for the year, and their stock sold off pretty hard that day and the next. We saw some banks come out. You know, we saw J.P. Morgan and we saw Wells Fargo on Friday. Stocks were up initially. J.P. Morgan was and ended in the red. Wells Fargo is having some difficulties because their margins are being squeezed because interest rates are so low. They're not making it much on the spread. It's something we've been talking about when you look at the spread and you look at the overall potential for profit because the yields are so low on the long and short end. So what's happening is you're getting a flattening of the yield curve, and that is not good for banks. It just doesn't help their profit margins. We also saw a recent turnaround. You saw Yum, it was doing great and then dropped, you know, it was up about 6% one day and then the next day it dropped. Same thing happened with Costco. Costco actually closed on its low. The day that it announced its earnings, it was pretty good earnings. They beat. Projections were okay. Management was upbeat. But then it started to kind of tail off and then came right back in to the same price or a little bit lower than it was just prior to the earnings. We're seeing a lot of this go on right now where profit taking is happening, a lot of distribution in markets. And in fact, when you look at it, our market indicator in terms of trend is right now it has shifted to the left. If left is markets in hardcore correction, to the right, markets in hardcore rally. we were kind of right in the 50%, the halfway zone is kind of, we'll call it neutral. We were in a rally mode for a number of months, or at least, you know, not a super rally, but a good rally. It wasn't a very strong rally, but it was a decent rally. Well, we kind of shifted over to the left now. And we're seeing that because even on the good days, we're finding that markets are closing down their lows. Watch the candles. Watch your high-low close bars on a chart on a daily basis. And you'll see this, that stocks come out of the gate and they're doing well. And then all of a sudden they start to sell off throughout the day. Not much happens. And then what is that telling us? Well, that's telling us that there's institutional distribution happening in the marketplace in a general nature. Of course, it's not every stock. Some stocks are, you know, bucking the trend, but you know, you're starting to see big stocks, money come out of them. Look what's going on with Apple. Right after they announced their iPhone 5, I think the stock went up to what, 710? And right now it's kind of in the low sixes. We have a mark about 608 to 612, right about there for an initial entry. If it gets to that point, it looks like there's really good support at that level. But between now and then, which is another 2 or 3%, there's not much support. You know, Apple ramped up. Remember when it did that ramp up? There's kind of, it's got to do what's called a back and fill a little bit here. It's got to gather some players kind of nibbling in, some players moving out again. And then you want to get it when it hits that support level. Last week, something similar happened, a little bit different, but similar situation with a company called Baidu. Baidu is the Chinese search engine, Asian search engine that has been doing incredibly good. And a lot of people compare it to the Google of Asia, the Google of China. And Baidu has been really not doing so well. It's kind of like a buy don't. It's been sold because this Qihoo has been taking some of its market share they've been concerned about, and the slowdown in Asia with technology and all the different things that are happening with internet-related stocks. Well, when you look at it, and you look at the chart of it, and you look at it the way we looked at it, at least, and you see that there was a longer-term support down, all the way down at about 105.95, we pegged it. We hit the stock right at that level. We actually alerted our Trigger Point Research subscribers to that as a bounce play, taking a very tight stop on the downside, and we hit it at 105.95, and it closed up very nicely from there. It closed the week about $5 higher than that. Now, these kind of things happen, but you got to be aware that when you see these support levels that are being held, those are times when you want to like look for a quick trade into that with a very small range on the downside for a stop, or better said, a tight stop. So one of the things that have happened, not only are we seeing this weakness and the concern coming back into Europe and the dollar and the euro getting kind of all wonky again, but we found that the IMF and the World Bank both downgraded global growth for next year, put a real kibosh on India, some of the emerging markets, dropped most countries around the world, as well as the U.S., but not as much. And that really started to spook investors. And that's where you're starting to see, okay, well, are we going to meet earnings? Are we going to have a difficult time in earnings? You know, what's going on in Australia with the mining companies? Yeah, we have coal and some of the, as I would say, the rotten stocks that have been dismissed by investors all year and really just hatcheted, finally getting a little bit of a relief rally here. But at the same time, some of the leaders and the stocks that are really solid fundamentally have been rolling, and that takes down the market. So these are some key things you need to be looking at, you know, when you're thinking, okay, what are the institutional guys doing? Well, do they want to get ahead of this and kind of just in case we start seeing some further discussion and disappointing news out of Europe and Asia, and what are they going to do to, you know, protect their portfolios here? Well, they could sell things outright. They can hedge. They can buy some puts and, you know, or for that matter, sell some part of their portfolio and buy some call options to kind of a stock replacement situation. Lots of things that you have to pick up on, cue into, as you're looking at markets, not just the broad market where it goes up or down, the Dow or the NASDAQ, but you need to look at the individual underlying components of what's happening. Because what happened last week was that we did see some downside. A few days were just kind of okay. They really didn't go very far, but a lot of stocks really got hit very hard. The financials ahead of the big week of JP Morgan and Wells Fargo, and then we have Monday coming up, we have Citi, and then the list goes on and on, with companies that are going to be reporting. You know, at the end of the week, you have GE, which is another financial stock. And we'll go through that list in a minute of what's going to be reporting and all that. But this, you know, nobody wants to really be zonked after stocks ran up so nicely into this. But let's quickly just backstep for 1 second. Let's talk about what's coming up this week in eco. There's always something we want to talk about and understand a little bit more about, because the economics of the day do have market-moving implications. So with the Empire of Manufacturing, this is the New York State manufacturing number coming up. Last month was just abysmal, down 10%, or down, it was negative 10, I should say. And the survey's calling for about negative 4, a little bit of a better number coming out of that area. That's important. We like to look at the Philly Fed. That's coming out later in the week. We also have a lot of retail sales coming out as well on Monday. We have advanced retail sales looking for about a 0.8% increase. And if you take out and strip out autos, we're going to see 0.6. We take out autos and gas, 0.4. And we're going to see business inventories, which have been on the rise lately. And that's a good thing for GDP. We talked about this. But more importantly, when I see business inventories and wholesale inventories rising, I want to look at them with respect to how they compare and their ratio with the sales, the retail sales and wholesale sales, et cetera. Now, what's important to note here is that when you see that ratio, the inventories, the sales ratio, what you want to do is look at, you know, how's that tracking? Is it on the way up? Because if that's the case, as we've been seeing lately, what's happening is that inventories are being created and they're not selling. And what that means is that manufacturing on the back end eventually is going to slow down. Or what's going to happen is that companies, retail, is going to have to do something like put sales on. And when they put sales on, their inventory may get stripped out and do a lot better, but they're going to have margin pressure. So that's something we want to look at. We're going to see CPI, PPI this week. We're going to see industrial production capacity utilization. That's happening on Tuesday. Wednesday, we're going to see more information about housing starts, et cetera. Then we're going to see initial jobs claims again. Last week was very good, 339. But we need to talk about this for a second, because that number that came out, 339, was far less than was expected. We were expecting somewhere about the 360s, 370s, something like that. And that's 370,000 of initial claims for the week. But this miraculous number came in, which was on the heels of another very good number, which was the previous week's unemployment rate. What's going on? Are we getting all of a sudden this really great jobs boost? And are we really seeing something spectacular happening here? Or is this something else at work? And the question is, what could that be? Well, there was some speculation on some very strange hiring that we talked about, a lot of part-time hiring into the payroll reports the previous Friday. Now what we're hearing is that it's possible that a state, a big state, didn't report in time. We'll find this out next week with a revision. They didn't report in time to come in for the initial claims, and that could have been about a 30,000 position person a boost to the actual number. That would be pretty interesting. The speculation is that California didn't have their number in time. Then we're going to see, like I said, on Friday, we're going to see the Philly Fed leading indicators, Thursday on that, and the existing home sales on Friday. So a lot coming up on top of what's happening in Europe. And there's a lot of fear right now, a lot of speculation, again, floating around, that we're going to see the potential for maybe within 6 to 8 weeks, Greece possibly have to be on the block again for leaving and exiting the euro if they can't make their payments. And in fact, if they can't meet the criteria that the Troika put out in so far as their cuts that they have to do in order to get their next tranche of bailout money so they can keep the government running. So there's something going on there that we have to look at. I want to get into what's happening with earnings next week, and I want you to write down a few things that are very interesting, because some of the things that are going on are going to, again, be read-throughs for the economy and for the rest of earnings season. We have a lot of numbers and a lot of companies reporting this coming week. But before we do that, I want to mention, of course, they're back, the great GoToMeeting. Now, they've been something that we've really enjoyed. We've given a variety of presentations and our classes, and we've done a great number of meetings to groups, large and small, with GoToMeeting. And I think it's a fantastic, truly a fantastic technology, because it allows you to meet with people face-to-face, or, you know, share your screen, share your information, work in real time and collaborate without leaving your computer, whether it's your laptop, you could be in an airport, you could be at home, you could be at your office. And GoToMeeting by Citrix has now this HD video, and they have just an amazing amount of flexibility. You could do it from your iPad, and you can actually get it for free, 30 days free. So you can go to gotomeeting.com, get it free for 30 days by clicking the try it free button. There's a little button at the top there. Just click on it. Use the promo code podcast, and you'll get 30 days of free, unlimited use of GoToMeeting. And it's really, you got to try it. We use it all the time. I think it's something that you'll really find very helpful, very much that will help your business, your personal life. And it's something that once you get it, you're going to be like, well, how did I live without this before? And what was I doing? How did I work with people before this? So check it out. Go to GoToMeeting.com. Click on the try it free button. Put in the code podcast and you're off and running. Great stuff. GoToMeeting by Citrix. All right. So what do we have coming up? We have economics we know about. We have some things in Europe we know about. Okay, great. What's going on? And I got a long list right here. There's a lot of pages, about six or seven pages. But I'm going to try to go through the top events that really we have to pay attention to. Let me do this in order of the dates that they're going to be coming out. Let me kind of get to the beginning here. Here we go. So, all right, what do we got? We got Citigroup coming out before the market on Monday. Now, the expectations for banks have been ratcheted down due to a lot of things. And what we've seen last week was kind of a sell the news phenomena that occurred, and a lot of banks were taken down. And really, it was the Wells Fargo number that kind of spooked everybody. JP Morgan actually looked pretty good overall, and Jamie Dimon had some good things to say about the end of the crisis in housing, and things were picking back up very well. And he's a good guy to listen to. I mean, I really do believe that. We have Citigroup. I don't know what we can really take away from Citigroup. They have such a convoluted, you know, bunch of businesses, and they're in a kind of a different league. They're still, you know, kind of the between Bank of America and Citigroup, they're the black sheep of the family, so to speak. But they're coming out. We have Packaging Corp of America. Now, what's important about that is, you know, that's going to give you kind of a read through on, you know, what's been shipping, what's been packed, what's been kind of going on in the world of retail, and especially online, of packaging, et cetera. Inventory issues go right into that. So I think that's going to be something that's going to be important to look at. That's going to be happening. A couple of the top events, them and Charles Schwab on Monday. Now, Tuesday, we have Coca-Cola coming out, United Healthcare. Goldman Sachs will be presenting there. IBM and Intel. Now, Intel's been knocked down to a 52-week low recently. The entire sector, semiconductors in general, have been cut by many analysts of late, which is really kind of interesting if you think about it, because the new technology they have and their great processors. You saw AMD come out last week and just totally bombed. So they're coming out, and we got to watch for them, because we're going to find out really between IBM, which we had Infosys, a company that does a lot of similar things to IBM does from India, knock down their outlook. And we're going to have to look at what that means for IBM. Is IBM going to be able to hold on? I would suspect that IBM is going to restate their the fact that they're going to continue with their buybacks, which they do like no other company. They're amazing with that. And I think that we're going to see that commitment from them as well, and probably a decent number for them. But you know what? If truth be told, I do believe that they're going to probably also be coming out with some, you know, guidance looking outward that they're a little bit soft on. So we'll see what happens with that. Intuitive Surgical is going to be interesting as well. They make a very high-tech robotic for surgeries. You know, their machines are very expensive. The question is going to be whether or not that the hospitals are going to be spending money on this. And that's going to be pretty volatile. It's a very expensive stock. Estimates are about $3.50 per share of earnings. We'll see what happens with that. And when I say expensive, I'm talking about the price itself, not the ratio. We're going to see also things like Domino Pizza, Apollo Group, which will be interesting to watch from the for-profit educational stocks that are coming out. Now, we have Abbott Labs coming out. We have BlackRock. BlackRock was a big article in Barron's this weekend, you know, touting how great they are. This is going to be on Wednesday. We have Bank of New York. We have Bank of America. We're going to see what's going on there. But Stanley Black & Decker, I want to see, because that's kind of the construction, the home building, the do-it-yourself, all the machinery and tools and things of that nature that go into that. We'll see how they're playing. I think that's going to be pretty important to be watching as well. PepsiCo, clearly. A company that we like, Align Technology. They make the Invisalign for your teeth. And something that has been really just on fire and doing very, very well. eBay is the same day. American Express, they're expecting to have about a dollar and change, about $1.08 is the estimate for Amex. And the last couple times they came out with earnings have not been really terrific. We have Halliburton. Halliburton's been kind of one of those stocks that lately has, you know, been doing good, then it does bad. It's been kind of vacillating back and forth. An oil services company, probably the one that everybody watches in the industry for oil services. And we're going to see what happens there, but they really have an opportunity to do something well here. But I don't know. I mean, they haven't been really providing the big numbers that are really exciting of late. Now, on the 18th, we're going to be seeing a couple of other ones that are important. Philip Morris, Morgan Stanley, and Verizon. Chipotle is coming out. We'll see. You know, Chipotle was knocked down recently when a big hedge fund, we talked about this, when a big hedge fund manager came out and said that they were shorting into that. And it kind of went down, came back up nicely, came back down. And we'll have to see what the effect, the really impact of the higher food costs with corn and with cattle and chicken, et cetera, are really going to have on them. So we're going to watch that. Watch Riverbed Technologies. They have been very, very volatile when it comes to their earnings season. You're also going to be looking at Athena Health, which is something that's also very volatile. These are names I want you to write down. Polaris Industries, they make a variety of off-road vehicles, 4x4s, as well as a variety of other recreational vehicles. And they have been great. I mean, they have been just absolutely terrific. But we'll see if the economy of the world is going to be weighing on them, because they have been doing an amazing job of providing superior earnings growth for a very long time. But the big daddies that we're going to see that day really are Microsoft and Google. So keep your eyes peeled to that. That's going to be pretty important. And rounding it off on the 19th, on Friday, we're going to see GE, which is going to be obviously a read-through of the global, not only the energy and financial and everything, the big conglomerate that they are. We're going to really see and listen to very carefully what they have to say about you know, what's going on in the world. We're also going to see Edward Life Sciences as they dropped off a cliff last week. Alexion Pharmaceuticals, very important. This is on the 19th. And Tractor Supply and Wynn. Now, Wynn may announce on that date their special dividend. They usually do so about October or November. They usually have been historically paying out a pretty good dividend, end of year special dividend. We'll see what happens there. So I will be watching these very closely, and I would be listening to the conference calls, reading through what management says about the outlook, because I think these are the key, this is the kind of the key week that I think is really going to pass through what's going on around the world and the strength of or the concern of managers for the next couple of quarters moving forward. So really earnings week this week, pay attention to and pay attention to these stocks and what their managers say. I think it's really, really important. So now we know about earnings, but let's kind of go next step and let's take a look at what we're going to be looking at, important levels for various indices. In particular, in the U.S., we look at the Russell 2000, the S&P 500 as two that we really need to focus on. So you have the S&P 500, which are obviously the big names, right? Those are the big cap companies, the stalwarts of industry, the thing that everybody watches, you know. And I would suggest, by the way, a lot of people, you know, still looking at the Dow. What's the Dow doing? Start getting yourself more acquainted and accustomed to looking at the S&P 500, because that's a better representation of what the big stocks are really doing. You know, you have 500 stocks blended together. Now, obviously, there's a little bit more of a weighting when you look at some of the stocks like Google and Apple and, you know, some of the stocks that have the bigger market cap, because the S&P 500 is a market cap weighted index. So the capitalization rate of the company, the size of the company in dollars, the value, and is weighted more heavily in the S&P 500, where the Dow Jones is a price weighted index. The price of the stock in there. So this is one of the things that's interesting, because a lot of people, why can't Apple go into the Dow and all that? Well, Apple's price, if it just got shot right into the Dow and something came out, let's say Alcoa came out, you know, and that's a sub $10 stock, and Apple goes in, which is a, you know, north of $600 stock. Well, all of a sudden you're saying, wait, if you got a price weighted index, how does that affect it? Man, that would be kind of amazing. I mean, just a tremendous move in terms of the weighting of Apple inside of that index. That can't happen. So maybe Apple splits one day, I don't know, something like a 10 or a 15 to 1, something crazy. Maybe it could be put into the Dow at that point. But still, because you have the market cap weighting, of the S&P 500. And that is more important in my opinion in terms of what to follow. Start getting a little bit more familiar with that. And then we like to follow also the Russell 2000, which is part of the Russell 3000, which is the 3,000 stocks that make up the Russell Index. And part of that is the Russell 1000, similar to the S&P 500, the larger capitalized stocks, the top third, if you would, of the stocks that are out there. And then you have the smaller stocks, the 2,000. That's the bottom two-thirds in terms of market capitalization. So you're looking at these smaller stocks in terms of how they're reacting, how they're being affected by market trends, and you're looking at the large caps, and you can separate them. As a matter of fact, we look at those two, and we see when we look at them separately, we see the differential, and then when we look at them together, we can kind of come up with the big picture of what's going on around the world with stocks that are based in the U.S. So here's some things you need to look at, okay? You have some real clear support on the S&P down at about 1410, somewhere around there. 1425 is clearly a number that everybody's looking at for the S&P to hold on to. And we're about, close to that level right now. It bounced off of there a couple of times, been dinging around. And right now, when we look at the S&P 500, we're looking at somewhere about 3 points lower would get us right about there. So we're now, kind of 25 basis points, something like that. Well, 1425, if you break through there, about 1410 is the number you want to look at. And that's a real important level. There's some good support going across there. And then down another 10 points, you have about 1400. There's really good support there. Round numbers are always an important number to look at. Always. It's just a psychological situation with round numbers. And then you have about the 1380s or so is probably the downside level on the S&P if things start breaking down. Now, a lot of this is going to be obviously due to fears about Europe. It's going to also be about earnings outlook. But I think the earnings outlook this week will really shape the levels on the S&P 500 because a lot of the big companies that play a particularly heavy role in the S&P 500 are going to be reporting. And not only that, you're going to get the read-through, as we talked about, from some companies to others in the same industry that will tell us a little bit about what's going on with their outlook from a management standpoint. So we'll look at the outlook there, and I want you to really hone in and maybe draw a line across a chart at the 1425 area and say, hey, we got to watch that because if we do break down on a close in there, you're going to see a lot more selling coming in down to about 1410. Okay, some important technical numbers that you need to pay attention to. And then again, from 1410, you get down to 1400. So we're kind of going down in 10-point increments here and then 1380. Now, would you buy the bounce? Would you put some money into the SPY at the 1425 level? Yeah, well, that's an important level to look at. I would be careful about that. I'd be more inclined at the 1410 level. There's a lot better support there, a lot more psychological support and clear technical support from just a trend line support. But from a volume base, from a point where there is some really good volume and there's some good interaction with price and volume action, it's 1410. A little bit different, but important. Would I invest at 1410? Yeah, I'd take a stab at 1410 with a little bit of a stop down, about 3 points, if you're going to do something like that with SPY. And then at the 1400 number, look for that. 1380 is where I get a little bit more excited on the S&P. That would be a significant breakdown of the highs, about 100 points or so from the high on the S&P this year down to where it is. And I would take a more of a significant positioning at that level with some stops. Now, on the Russell 2000, okay, this is an important level. We are under support. The support goes down to about 811 right now. And when you look at the Russell 2000, you have to look at the fact that small cap stocks are less liquid. And when they do get sold, they move down a lot more incrementally. When they sell off without liquidity, you can see that they have a much greater amount of volatility. And where we are right now is a point where you can see another, good downside stroke on this because there really is no support at these levels right here. Where would the support be? About 811 on the Russell 2000. So you can go to like Yahoo or Google or Finviz or whatever. Just, put those in for the Russell 2000 and take a look at where they are. And then you can invest in something like one of the ETFs like SPY, or if you want to try to take a stab at the doubles on a short or long for either the Russell or the S&P 500. Look at those levels. Write those down as important levels that is going to be dictating where price flow is and when buyers step in. Now, obviously, a lot of this is going to depend on the euro. There is a very, very clear correlation between the euro and the equity indices in the U.S. Whether you want to say it's just the dollar, that's possible. As the dollar moves up, you know, you see the reverse happen. The indices on an equity basis, equity indices move lower. But I want you to pay attention really to the price action for a little while. Let the price action of a stock, let the price action of an index actually tell you what's going on rather than trying to guess due to, for example, economics or news items or headlines or, you know, just simply one or two managers' outlook. Let's look at the big picture and find out like what, you know, is going on from a distribution or an accumulation standpoint when it comes to investors. That's the best way, letting that, you know, let you be led by that rather than trying to get in advance of something. Now, obviously, if you see a breakdown, if you see something that looks like it's going to break down and it closes on a breakdown and you see that there's a, you know, high level of volume, whether it's a stock or an index, that's when you get involved either on the short or long side, right? If it breaks above, it holds support, or if it breaks down and crashes through support, you know, you have 50-day moving averages that we're pretty close to on the S&P 500. You broke down on the NASDAQ, on the Russell as well. Keep that in mind because that's something that you really want to pay attention to when it comes to an index. Now, with a stock, it's a little bit more difficult because stocks will move around in a much greater, in a much more volatile action. You have to find out before the earnings come out what the expectations are, what they have done with expectations in the past. Is a company more reactive to, let's say, an earnings miss on EPS or an earnings beat? Are they more reactive to simply the revenue numbers? I mean, these are kind of things that are really important rather than guessing. And at the same time, let the price action in the regular markets, not necessarily aftermarkets, let the or the pre-markets, let the price action lead you to where you want to be. Now, last week, if you would have invested in Costco, you would have been let in and probably been in a little bit of a bull trap. You had to be in, you're over the top, you're over resistance, you get in, and then all of a sudden this thing breaks down, and then where do you go? Keep that in mind. Don't let necessarily the pre-market action and the headlines and the big old great numbers that look like they may be better numbers from a beat standpoint. Companies are, you know, they're trained to do this. They know how to beat the numbers. They know how to come in on the street and do what they have to do to make it look like it's supposed to. But then what happens is the expectations are really looked at very closely in terms of what management is saying and what their guidance is and how that differs from where they are. The other mistake that a lot of investors make during earnings season, this is really important to understand, is that just because a company beats expectations doesn't mean it's on the right track. If, for example, a company has been earning, let's say, on average, growth of their EPS on a regular basis, quarter over quarter on a one-year basis, right? So one year's quarter ago now, and then two quarters ago, 1 year back, and looking forward, they've been, you know, kind of growing over time. And now they're showing a slowdown. And now, even though they beat estimates, their earnings are actually lower. You have to look at the trend of actual earnings and actual earnings growth, or, you know, where the earnings are going to the downside, because that's really what is going to enable you to understand what the value is of the stock. If they're simply looking at PE ratios and earnings growth and things like that, well, you're going to see that even if they beat estimates that analysts came in at, well, you may see a pop initially, but all of a sudden you realize, wait a minute, what's happening with the stock? They beat really well. They had better revenue than expectations. But you know what? Let's take a look back in history and look how the growth of the revenue and growth of the EPS has actually been doing. Let's look at margins. Are they pressured? Are they being squeezed or are they expanding? Let's look at, you know, cash flow. Let's look at the balance sheet. Let's look at a variety of things. Don't get caught up in a headline knee-jerk reaction, panic move. Know where your levels are in terms of your technicals, and at the same time, understand the fundamentals that go into it. It's the only way you're going to be successful. And it's not easy, by the way, because a lot of times, you know, you're going to get it wrong, but understand that that's what you have stops for. Don't have a panic stop. Have the stop set at what level should be. If it breaks down below this, you have it preset if you go long, or If you go short, you should have a preset stop. If you go on the high, unless there's something that you absolutely 100% say, everybody else has got it wrong, I'm going to hold it till this point. And it kind of gets to that point. But then you know what? If it goes past there, give in. You're not right. And just kind of move forward. Let price be your guide. And at the same time, let the historical fundamentals, not just what the analyst expectations were, be the secondary point, or vice versa, in where you're going to put your money. I guess the whole point here is, and the summation of this discussion right now is, it's not about being right necessarily. It's about making money. Now, sometimes you could do both, clearly, but there are times that it's not going to happen, and that's okay. It's okay as long as if you're not right, you know where to move aside, take your lumps, and not every investment is going to work out, but that's okay. That's how it goes. That's what makes the whole investing game and what makes markets. But at the same time, realize that just because you believe something to be true, you could be very right, but at the wrong time. That makes sense? So the timing of your entries, the timing of your exits have to be, well planned out and well thought out. And again, they may not be right, but at least what you need to do is get yourself positioned to have the odds in your favor. I guess that's the big point of that discussion, okay, and the summation of that, and I hope that helps. Let's segue into, since we're talking about stocks, let's talk about Stocktoberfest. You know, we've been publishing and putting up the analysis of those stocks that you had requested, and we have a pretty good list already started, a couple of weeks in. We did about, I guess, two a day, and we've already talked about F5 and Ulta Cosmetics, Caterpillar, Coach, Fastenal. Hey, let's see what we said on Fastenal. Fastenal actually did very well in the earnings. I wonder what we had. Yeah, we had a strong buy on them, and we posted that on October 3rd. It was rated 7.9, and we looked at their earnings growth, their earnings potential, EPS, and they scored pretty well both on our T-score, which is our technical score, as well as our fundamental score. Trying to look down this list here of who may have reported other than that. Let's see. We mentioned Coach. Coach came up also, and we had, let's take a look at that on 10-2. That was from Joe. He gave it to us. We had a sell on that, and actually we are short that position. That's actually come down quite significantly. Microsoft is coming out. Let's take a look. So Pat C. sent in Microsoft. We posted this on the 12th. We have a very strong sell on that. Well, a strong sell. We have a negative 2. T-score is a negative 5. Fundamental score is good, of course, on Microsoft, but we have a sell on that rating. Coming up, we have next week Coca-Cola, Symantec, Symantec sent in by Angela, Oracle by Brad. We have Freeport-McMoRan by Jeremy, Matawan by Eric, and DTV. We have Corning, IPGP, SLW coming in, which will be interesting to look at. That's by Mark A. SLW is Silver Wheaton. Let's see what else. Pretty much Anderson's come in. Charles R. asked us to send that in. So a very full week of Stocktoberfest. And what we do there is, as you remember, we took your stocks that you had suggested and we did as many as we could, about two a day, sometimes three. And we're putting up an analysis of the fundamentals and the technicals. And we score them using what we think is a pretty complex, but yet a very simple strategy to look at what's happening fundamentally. Is there earnings growth? How are their margins? You know, what's happening with EPS growth and revenue growth, not only historically, but, what's projected. We want to look at just like we talked about a moment ago, what's happening on a quarter over quarter basis, year over year. We want to look at, is the company still providing a good overall a basis for believing that they're going to continue doing what they're doing? What's happening technically? Are they in a good pattern? Are they breaking down? And we put this whole analysis not only in numbers and in a combination of a score for you, but we're also looking at what's happening with many of the other statistical data that's underlying that. And we write that out and give you a full narrative of what's happening. So you get a really good picture of what's happening with each of these stocks. Now, remember something, this is important, that we're snapshotting them as of that day and looking a little bit forward, right? So what's going to happen, their fundamentals won't change much unless you have earnings that come out and something significant happens. But more importantly, the technical score, obviously, which is based on charting of the price compared to, you know, a variety of different things. We put in probably 10 different trending and oscillating indicators, as well as 50-day moving averages and crosses of the 200 and things of that nature. And we put them and we weight them with certain things being more important than others, and we give it a technical score. That technical score is really a snapshot at that exact moment looking backwards, because we don't know what's going to happen moving forward. And that's going to change depending on the pattern and what's happening with the price. So realize the fundamental score is something you want to look at, and you want to find fundamentally sound companies to invest in. We know that. And then you want to look at the technicals. So what we're looking at is, okay, is this a fundamentally sound company? And then number two, is it a time right now to invest in it? And if we find that the technicals are really way out of whack, well, that may be not something we want to invest in unless it's a maybe a short-term bounce trade or breakdown or something like that. But, you know, what's happening with that on a long-term basis? So this is how we start building a list when we find a stock and find out how the technicals are and how the fundamentals are. And when we actually go out and search for stocks out of the list of thousands that are out there, we keep a pretty high level of cutoff and a threshold for if they're making money and if they're actually rewarding investors and doing what they should be doing with the revenue streams and the margins and with their earnings and with their growth and with just a whole host of factors that go into that. And that's how we get that fundamental thing. And obviously the score, and it's important to understand something that, yeah, a terrible stock fundamentally can do very well. Look at the Kohl's. Kohl's have been on fire for a while. It's the only thing I can say with Kohl's. Kohl's were on fire. I mean, they're hot. It's a hot bit of activity. You know, they're sizzling. They're glowing. But, you know, the fact is that when you look at them, you got to think, you know, well, this can't be a stock I can invest in. But, you know, there are times there are turnaround stories. There are things that will come up that make a lot of sense and why I want to invest in something like that. But again, when we're looking at this, we're looking at the quality of the fundamentals and the quality of the technicals. Fundamentals, again, stay kind of consistent over time until their earnings come out, until their projections come out, till we see what's happening with them. And then the technicals will change on a day-to-day basis. But check that out. If you go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, we left the guide, if you will, the full index of stocks that we're reviewing. And each one of them that has been published already has a link, and it'll take you right to the page that shows you everything about that stock. And, you know, I've gotten a lot of good comments from people about the ease of understanding what they're looking at. And I'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is write askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. So with that, we have a lot to look forward to in next week. We'll be doing our tweeting thing. You just the Andrew Horowitz is my name there, @AndrewHorowitz on Twitter. Follow me there. And you'll get first information, because when our blog posts go up, or Stocktoberfest goes up, or a podcast goes up, it hits Twitter immediately. And you can follow all the things that we're talking about during the day. A lot of times we talk about a stock to watch or breaking down, and we go through, you know, hey, take a look at this, what's happening here, or just pass through some information on you know, what's happening in the world and news. But also make sure to bookmark the Disciplined Investor, because you're going to find that we have a lot of things that happen on a regular basis there that we report on and talk about, whether it's, you know, what's happening on the economic front. Put up a lot of charts that give you trends, and you can follow Stocktoberfest as well. With that, we're going to say arrivederci, goodbye. Thank you for listening. Make sure to tell a couple of friends, put a review on iTunes, and stick around for next week. We're going to have a lot of things to talk about, and something that's going to be very interesting that is a little bit offbeat. But for those of you out there that are kind of like gun shy about the markets, this could be very interesting to take a look at. We have something lined up that I think you'll really enjoy, and much different than what we've talked about before. But something that could be very much ripe for the time that we're in right now. So I'll see you again next week. Thanks for joining me. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company. a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.